What's up, everybody? You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I am your host, Isaac Weishaupt. You might be watching the video if you're a supporter of the show on Tier 2, or maybe you're on Rockfin. I'm trying to spread like a virus all over the place. I'm on TikTok. I'm doing a TikTok live reporting of this. Be sure to subscribe everywhere because you don't know where I'm going to pop up. Today we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. Yes, it's that time of year, everyone, where the sports ball is on the front center of everyone's mind. But as you know, I don't even know who's playing this year. Don't really care. Doesn't matter to me. Don't really watch the game. Now, I did a whole show. Every year, I've done a whole show on the symbolism found with the halftime show of the Super Bowl. Now, this year, of course, we're going to have some 90s rap legends and Kendrick Lamar, right? It's got a West Coast theme with Eminem also, though, right? So, of course, we're going to see some symbolism. Maybe, maybe not. Already on the commercial, we saw some. We saw the chessboard, which is a Freemasonic idea of the opposing reconciliation of opposites of the opposing forces of black and white. With the idea that in chess, you've got two players. You got a black and a white. And if you're, you know, and traditionally, black represents evil and white represents good. So when, and the Freemasonic occult idea comes into play with chess, maybe you are the player that is the black player. You are the bad guy, but to you, your perspective has now shifted 180 degrees. Now what is good is bad. The white is now the bad, because the white's the bad guy, and vice versa. But you get it. You're all very smart. But today we're going to talk about, this is going to be a basic primer of the Super Bowl. This is for maybe more of the normies who don't believe in any of this, because I can't believe after all these years, there's still people out there who don't believe any of this could really be happening. They think this is all a bunch of silly stuff. So that's what this show is going to be. It's going to be a very stripped down, basic, fundamental understanding of how the symbolism works, why this is happening, why we as truthers believe in such a crazy idea. But first, and let's start off with the real normie, sheeple, basic understanding. You have to believe and understand that you're being lied to, that you're being manipulated. I think we can all agree with that, can't we? Can't we all agree that we're used by others? We're manipulated through forces sometimes outside of our control. And we got to go back to a guy named Edward Bernays, old cousin Eddie here. And I did a three-part show back in like 2017 on Edward Bernays. There's a documentary called Century of the Self. I highly recommend it. In fact, I think Kanye West recommended it to me. Not personally, of course. I'll talk to that maniac. What's up with those boots? Why is he wearing them big, like, fishing boots or whatever those are? Anyway, Kanye West posted about it, I believe, and I did a whole three-part series, so check that. I believe 2017 I did that, or 2018. But Edward Bernays is a very important figure in this, because he, of course, was Sigmund Freud's nephew. And one basic idea you'll find when you research the Illuminati and the idea of global elites, puppet masters, one recurring theme you'll see over and over and over again are the studies of the mind and how the mind works and how they can, there's an idea of like a philosophy of reductivism. They think everything is approached from a scientific perspective. They believe that the human mind can be represented in digital form. They think that the mind is merely just a computer. And of course, we all know this is wrong, because they subscribe to science. It's a technocracy, all right? And I might be I know we were supposed to go down to the fundamentals here, and I know we're probably getting a little confusing already, so I'm not going to harp on it too long, but the idea is that they've been studying how our mind works for a long time, and they're pretty good at it, all right? Sigmund Freud, he came up with different models of how the mind works and what it does in the interacting parts, all right? And here comes his nephew, Edward Bernays, the king of public relations, they call him, right? This is the guy that made you fellas listen up. Edward Bernays is the guy that made you go spend 2 months' salary on a diamond ring. Because diamonds are worthless. We agree, kind of like a fiat currency, we agree on this idea that a diamond is worth something. But it's actually not. And you have to go back to the De Beers family, who had this monopoly on diamonds for a really long time. They hired Bernays because they said, look, we've got all these diamonds. They're worthless. They're colorless, worthless gems. But we're going to hire Bernays to make the dummies, the sheeple, buy these diamonds, thinking that they are the greatest thing ever. And what they did was they shamed people to believe that diamonds were the only way you could express true love. And it started out, and they didn't swing for the fences yet. When it started out, they only wanted you to spend 1 month's salary on this diamond ring. And now you fast forward 100 years and it's 2 months' salary, so it doubled. Edward Bernays, also the guy that got women to smoke cigarettes, because women used to not apparently smoke cigarettes. He had this whole publicity stunt where they called it Torches of Freedom. It was back. He took advantage of the suffrage movement and equal rights and all that stuff, and one of the waves of feminism, to get women to believe that they too can show their independence by smoking a torch of freedom. Bernays, also the guy that got us to eat bacon and eggs for breakfast. Breakfast used to be a much more simple meal. So you've got, who do you got here? You got the diamond industry, big tobacco, the animal farms, all convincing us to change our ways through lies, through manipulation. And of course, these are like the most legit, honest companies out there, right? In fact, even the idea that America is a Christian nation is propaganda. It's not true. Because it wasn't until the 1950s that we started putting all these ideas of in God we trust and one nation under God. Because before that, we had held to the original founding fathers' vision, which they were what they call monism. They didn't really believe in a holy trinity, right? In fact, if you look at the early establishment of America, they were Rosicrucians that came over. And actually, where I'm from, in Southeast PA, you go to Conrad Beisel and Kepler's Cave, and you look up these things and you find out that those Rosicrucians from Europe, they wanted religious freedoms because they were getting persecuted by the church and the state over there, the Christian faith, to come over here. And the founding fathers knew that, and they, emulated that. That's why God is not in the Constitution. And America itself is kind of a weird psyop in some ways. And don't get me wrong, I love this country. I'm not saying bad things. It's a great country. It's done a lot of great things for me. All right. I even served this great country in the military. Which is, and case in point, that's why I can say these things, because guess where I live? I live in America where I can say these things. But a lot of other countries, they don't have like the Pledge of Allegiance that you say every morning. They don't do that. We have this weird fetishization of the flag and the pledge and all that stuff. I actually have some interesting things here. The guy who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance, I was doing a little research and it got a little squirrely down different rabbit holes. The guy who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance back in 1892, his name is Francis Bellamy. And he was very much into the separation of church and state, which is why he did not include in the original Pledge of Allegiance the term under God. You know, it says one nation under God. Speaking of which, I don't know if you guys do this, but I get like weird anxiety sometimes that I have to rehearse the Pledge of Allegiance. It's very strange, almost like in a dream, like in a nightmare, that I'm back in school and we get up to do the Pledge of Allegiance and I forgot it, which is kind of bizarre in itself. So anyhow, this Francis Bellamy guy, he was a Christian socialist who advocated for equal distribution of wealth based on the ideas of what Christ was teaching. And here in America, we've got one true God, and that is the God of capitalism. So they ran him out of his own church. And it wasn't until 1954 that Congress added the term under God to the Pledge of Allegiance. And they did this because of the Catholic fraternity, the Knights of Columbus. And it was very interesting to me because, maybe you know this, but Bellamy, when he started up this Pledge of Allegiance back in the late 1800s, the original, you know how like when you do the Pledge of Allegiance, you put your hand over your heart? The original pledge was a Nazi salute. I'm not going to emulate that on the video, but you put your hand out, palm down, and then raise it up. The exact same salute. So when the Nazis took it, we were like, okay, let's change it up a little bit. We just put our hand on our heart. But yeah, almost every state in America is required to do this Pledge of Allegiance. They drill it into your brain as a child. But the point is, the Founding Fathers, they actually weren't about that action, about this compulsory required ritual every morning. In fact, if you look in Washington, D.C., you'll notice all these pagan statues, obelisks and reflecting pools and the Sphinx. It's like Egyptian and Roman pagan statues everywhere. They weren't building massive statues to Christ. There were psychological operations all along the way to inception us, to inception our minds with this mythology of America and our world in general. And this all, and what I'm trying to say is it all goes back through the occultist. Because we talk about Edward Bernays and his buddies with, or his uncle Sigmund Freud, who was buddies with Carl Jung, and Carl Jung was a Gnostic. You've got a lot of these occult ideas of how do we manipulate the mind? How do we create a new reality? Now imagine if you could have the attention and the focus of the largest global audience, what could you do? What is possible? Even if maybe 1% of the audience can be put under a trance, if you're putting up big numbers, 1% is a lot. All right, you're still pushing P, as the kids say, but the Super Bowl annually is like the largest, most watched event there is. So just 1%, and who knows how high that number could really go, if you can just capture 1% or plant the seeds in the minds of the masses, then you're causing real change. You're talking about ritual magic. It's causing change to occur in conformity with the will. That's a mouthful. What does that mean? It means it in the realm of the occult, you've got magicians. And we're talking about a different form of magic than your David Copperfield stage magic, okay? Talking about magic with a K at the end. Because this guy, Aleister Crowley, added a K to the end of magic. K being the number of magic itself, the 11th letter of the alphabet. The will is the magician, okay? So in this case, the Illuminati, they're the magicians. And their will is to create a new reality, this technocracy of science. And how will they make this happen? They need to manifest their will into reality. They could sit here and think about it all they want, but they have to take action. How do they take action? They do it through revelation of the method. They do it by planting symbols into our subconscious. And all of this, and this goes back even further, It goes back to the law of Hermes, the Hermetic law of correspondence, as above, so below. And when you go back to ancient Egypt, and again, see the reference to the pagan gods and goddesses of ancient Egypt that you see in Washington, D.C., the early ancient Egyptians, they believed that this god named Hermes literally manifested in our world, and he taught man, the privileged man, the elites that were deserving of understanding, he taught them the laws of magic. And as the story goes, man eventually wrote this down on the Emerald Tablets. These tablets were lost in Atlantis or whatever. But one of the laws of the law of correspondence is as above, so below, which means things that happen on the earthly plane are directly affected and do affect the cosmos and the planetary bodies out there. And that sounds really weird, right? But think about in physics, you've got the law of gravity, and it talks about how masses put a gravitational force upon each other. Regardless of how big or small, it's proportional to how large the mass is as to how much gravitational force it puts upon the other planetary body. All right? And then we can get even wackier. You go into quantum physics, quantum entanglement, things connected at a distance. It gets kind of wacky in science. But that's the idea behind symbolism and the power of symbolism and how it works. It goes back to ancient Egypt and the time when man thought he was literally talking to the gods, and who knows, maybe they were. Maybe they were. Now, the Super Bowl, you'll notice it always has to happen on a Sunday. The Lord's Day, all right? Because, again, you go back to the pagan roots of religion. They were really into sun worship. Therefore, on Sunday would be the day of worship. And you'll notice the Super Bowl always goes by Roman numerals. They'll tell you the, you know, Super Bowl LXII or whatever. And you got to do the, you got to Google, what is LXII? Okay, it's 56. All right, got it. You know? They still use that to this day. They don't just call it by the number. But the Egyptians, they were really big into sun worship. You had Ra and Horus. You'll see them depicted with the sun disk above their head. And there's tons of religious mythology in all kinds of cultures, like the Greeks with Apollo, the sun god. And to me, I believe this is all to harken back to a pagan time of driving worship to paganism. That's what I believe. America is the new Atlantis. That's what Francis Bacon said. And if you go back to the foundations of America and the occultists that came over here for freedom of religion, I believe that was the original intent, is to have a fully pagan, non-Christian nation. All right? And Francis Bacon wrote the whole book. And you know, Francis Bacon, if you listen to... oh, man, I'm going to screw it up. My man, he's got a podcast. The Francis Bacon Podcast. What's it called? I got to get it right here. Life and Times of Francis Bacon? Is that what it is? I don't think that's right. Oh, dear. I'll put it in the show notes. Anyway, my man did a whole show on Francis Bacon. Sorry. And terrible. Francis Bacon, very influential. He's the guy who is supposedly Shakespeare. He supposedly retranslated the Bible to the King James Version. Lots of weird connections. But he also wrote about how America was the new Atlantis, because that's the idea, is through science, through the technocracy, they can have a world where man becomes God. All right. Now, how can they do their magic thing? How do they do this? Well, you look to the artists. Artists think and act on a different wavelength, all right? And these celebrities, these artists, they are the modern day gods and goddesses, which is very much like the pagan Romans and the Greeks. You have this pantheon of different deities of all different types, right? Different archetypes. And these celebrities and these artists, they control our minds. They take our energy, our resources, and we devote it to them. We're always obsessed with what they're doing. We're listening to their music. We're watching the movies. And the argument here is that the artists, not every single one of them, but most of them, if they get the doors opened to become these gods and goddesses, there's a price to be paid for that, whether that's the Faustian bargain of the blood sacrifice, which, shout out, I just sold a book. I got to sign this book for somebody on my Gumroad store. Sacrifice and Magic Behind the Mic is all about that, about the hip-hop music industry and the dark, occult, satanic ideas that go along with it, which I'm sure you're familiar with this guy named Travis Scott. There was a whole concert with some real weird stuff that happened last year, right? If you want to sign a copy of the book, go to gumroad.com/IsaacW. Link in the show notes, as always. Now, speaking of Travis Scott, if you watch, I did like 3 or 4 episodes on him. And on one of them, I watched the Netflix documentary, Look Mom, I Can Fly. And there's a very peculiar scene where backstage, the mayor of Houston shows up. And they sort of come to this agreement that Travis Scott is going to go out on the stage and, hey, kids, we got the mayor of Houston and we're going to talk about the thing. Do-do-do-do. Because the politicians know that the kids ain't listening to them. They don't care. They probably don't even know who the mayor of Houston is. What do they care? They care what Travis Scott thinks and what Travis Scott says. So there's a mutual arrangement there. The mayor of Houston, I'm sure, is opening up some doors and making sure Travis Scott can do the things he wants to do in Houston. And then vice versa. Travis Scott's going to tell the kids, like, hey, here's our buddy, the mayor of Houston. Now, these celebrities, one idea, if you read in the literature of the occult, is that the celebrities and the artists, they're used to channel the energies from the gods and the goddesses. They can make contact to the realms of the divine, which is where God resides, because they believe in this sort of ethereal God, not the God in the clouds, all right? And through the subconscious mind, these artists can make contact with divine inspiration. They call it muses sometimes. If you look to H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu, Cthulhu was channeled by artists in his fictional story, which is barely fictional. And the reason they choose artists is because they are the most sensitive to these energies. We all know an artist. They're a little weird, aren't they? Maybe they're seeing ghosts. I don't know what they're doing. They're out there. They're on another level, right? Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's like a woman told me back when I was doing conventions. She said, she corrected me, because she told me something. I go, oh, that's weird. She goes, not weird, different. You got it, lady. No, that stuck with me because it's true. Like, that's a mocking thing to be like, oh, that you're weird because you can see things. You can see shadow people. You're weird. Like, but that's not what I mean by it. I just say, wow, that's strange. That's different. But, you know, some people, they're sensitive to that. They not everyone's so open-minded, and they judge and critique, and they think all kinds of crazy stuff. But these artists, they're prone to get into altered states. They're able to access other dimensions in some weird way, right? Not some weird way, some different way, right? And in the Super Bowl, these artists are the biggest artists that there are usually, right? And strangely enough, they don't really get paid to do the Super Bowl. They do it for the publicity, because even they know the power of numbers. And it wasn't until the 1990s that we started seeing the Illuminati, I argue, taking advantage of these halftime Super Bowl shows. Because before that, it was marching bands, and it was kind of corny, right? Well, in 2004, it hit levels of unprecedented notoriety. The event called Nipplegate, where Janet Jackson was up there doing her thing, just dancing real nice, doing her great hits. I've always said Janet has better hits than Michael. Not a popular opinion, but I stand by it. She's at least been more consistent. You got to give her that, right? Anyway, she calls Justin Timberlake on stage, and you know what happens. At the end of the, he says, "I'm going to have you naked by the end of this song," and he pulls a string, and bam, out pops a titty. My goodness, I saw it live. I saw it live. I said, why? and yeah, that's crazy, right? Well, what happened after that was that Search, like most people in the world, went online to be like, I want to see that titty. So everyone Googled it and became the most searched term in history. I don't know if that still holds up, but if you look closely, you'll see that on her nipple was a ring. And that ring is the eight-pointed star of Ishtar, as seen on Eyes Wide Shut. If you read my book, Kubrick's Code, an analysis of the greatest Stanley Kubrick movies, you'll learn all about the Star of Ishtar. Again, we're talking about these Sumerian pagan gods and goddesses. And there it was. The largest search term in history focuses energy on a pagan goddess. Focusing energy on a massive level, right? Now, there's been a lot of Super Bowl performances with Illuminati symbolism. Another big one was Madonna, the Lady Madonna. She was portrayed as the Egyptian Isis. Not to belabor the point, but again, it always harkens back to these pagan gods and goddesses. And Sela was up there. He had his Saturnian black magician robe. They performed on a stage that had an X and an O. This is the Antichrist mark of the beast that Kenneth Grant speaks about in his books. Shout out Freeman Fly. If you read Freeman Fly and Jamie Hanshaw's Weird Stuff Culture Creation books, you know about this. The X and the O is a sigil to evoke Nodens, this Cthulhu-type beast from the abyss. And of course, Sela was wearing the Saturnian black magician robe, because Saturn is calling upon the dark energies. The Saturnian death cult. It's the embodiment of the other, because Saturn was the sixth planet from Earth. It was considered the outside, the other, the shadow, because these occult, some of these left-hand path occultists, they believe in this idea of antinomianism, anything that's bucking the norms, right? Beyonce, remember when she did the rock diamond? The triangle. I mean, it's officially a diamond, but it sure as hell looks like a triangle, right? That was back in 2013. In fact, I went to work the next day. This is back in my early blogging days. I started blogging in 2011, covering all this stuff. And you know the sad story. If you don't, check out IlluminatiWatcher.com. Go to my Start Here tab, and you can read the whole sad story about all the censorship I've been subjected to long before Joe Rogan even had to deal with any of it. And I never said the N-word. My God. Pick it on me. But anyways, I went to work the next day and I heard people talking about the rock thing. And I said, oh, damn. Everyone's talking about they were like, oh, she had an Illuminati symbol in her hand. Isn't that something? Back in 2013, people were talking about it. 2015, Katy Perry. She, of course, came out on the Riding the Beast, symbolic of the Scarlet Whore of Babylon, ushering in the end times, the apocalypse. And if you recall, I believe, I predicted that there would be some alien UFO stuff, and that indeed is how it went down, because Katy Perry showed up at that Super Bowl performance coming out of a UFO, if you recall. And then she came out on the field riding the beast, the Scarlet Whore of Babylon, which, of course, connects into Jack Parsons, an occultist that followed Aleister Crowley. He was also the guy who started JPL, which was the predecessor to NASA. big time occultist. And he did a ritual on the desert with L. Ron Hubbard, the guy that founded Scientology. And it was a, they called it the Babylon Working. It was a form of an Enochian call. Now, what does that mean? If you go back to the Elizabethan times, John Dee and Edward Kelly, they were these astrologists that worked for Queen Elizabeth. And they were into all this occult, illuminate, confirmed stuff. They were channeling aliens. All right? They wrote down a language, the Enochian language. And fast forward a few hundred years, and Aleister Crowley, another big-time occultist, used that Enochian language to communicate with Lamb, which is the first gray alien, back in 1917, during what he called the Amalantra Working. All right? Now, this Amalantra Working worked so well that Jack Parsons came along in 1946, I believe it was, 47. So, hey, Mr. Crowley, I want to do Mr. Crowley. Ozzy Osbourne, right? Did you get it? Did you get the reference? Where were we? I lost it. It's been a long day. Aleister Crowley. Yeah, Aleister Crowley did the Amalantra Working. Jack Parsons said, let me do that. I want to pull my own alien into the world. And guess what? I'm going to have sex with that alien. So they did. So he did the Amalantra Working, called the Babylon Working, because he's like, you know what? Not only am I going to pull an alien through, I'm going to have sex with the alien. And not only am I going to have sex with that alien's going to have a baby. And not only is it going to be a baby, it's going to be the Antichrist, and it's going to bring about the end of the world. So he did that. And here comes Marjorie Cameron. Anyhow, also did a three-part series on Marjorie Cameron back in 2018, I believe, if you want to learn more about that. That's a wild one. You got to listen to those. That's a wild story. It's like one of the craziest stories. I can't believe there's not a documentary out there covering all this. But Katy Perry comes out on, she comes out as the Scarlet Woman, and it was in Phoenix, right? The Suns and Four. And it happened on Imbolc, which is a pagan Illuminati holiday, means in the belly. And that night she got a finger tattoo and she said, it's time to draw blood tonight, because it's always a ritualistic thing for these folks. Then we had Travis Scott, who fell from the skies as the fallen angel. We had Shakira as another Scarlet Woman in red. We had The Weeknd, who had released a bunch of videos where he was possessed by demons in the elevator, just like the whole Prince saga. And he came out at the Super Bowl like a demon falling from the skies. I'm not making it up. I've covered all these every year. If you listen to my podcast and take a look at the images on Instagram I've got, at Isaac Weishaupt, take a look, like, and subscribe. It is all about an occult left-hand path. It's the Dionysian Orgia. Overloading the mind with rhythm and drumming. This is an ancient practice. I'm not trying to sound too footloosey here. But that's why they use these artists. That's why they use the music. Because it's very powerful. It's a very powerful medium. All right? Now let's wrap it up. Because it's probably a lot. If you're new to all this, you probably think this is a bunch of crazy malarkey. All right? And I give you, it sounds like a lot. It sounds crazy. But let's wrap it up. Why do they do this? Why the symbolism? It's because it matters to them. You go back to the Carl Jung, Sigmund Freud, Edward Bernays connections. They are all pretty smart guys. And they thought that symbols spoke to us on the subconscious level. That is, in fact, why marketing works. It's why people pay for ads. It's because it's true. It's because it works. There's this occultist named Eliphas Levi, and again, shout out Freeman Fly. He talked about the magnetic chain, and it's this principle that connects the consumer to the corporation. And of course, corporation is a term that means to corporate, which is creating a literal spirit, an entity that doesn't exist. Takes your energy in the form of currency. As a corporation, it incorporates, makes to make corporeal. Corporeal. These corporations, they take your energy and give you currency, a made-up currency, a fiat currency, to reinforce your slavery to the Saturnian time loop of constraints and time and measures. Long story short, it's the dreaded day job, right? Anyway, Eliphas Levi said this. He said, to form the magnetic chain is to originate a current of ideas which produces faith and draws a large number of wills in a given circle of active manifestation. A well-formed chain is like a whirlpool which sucks down and absorbs all. The chain may be established in three ways: by signs, by speech, and by contact. The first is by inducing opinion to adopt some sign as a representation of a force. Thus, all Christians communicate by the sign of the cross, Masons by that of the square beneath the sun, the Magi by that of the microcosm, made by extending the five fingers, etc. Once accepted and propagated, signs acquire force of themselves. It's about acquiring a force. That's what these symbols are for. That's what the marketing and the advertising is for. That's why the celebrities push the symbols, because you're already in that altered state because of the drums and the rhythm and the dancing. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? The great Sam Tripoli talked about how they're just stealing your louche. Is that what they're doing? What are they doing with this energy once you devote it to them? Are they sending it to the lizard people? So David Icke says. I believe, and what do I know, but this is what I believe. I believe in this evolution of consciousness. They're trying to take us down this path to a new global religion, Luciferian transhumanism, where man becomes God and the Antichrist is worshipped through the scientific technocracy. It's alchemical processes on a massive level. It's alchemy in the sense of taking the Saturnian lead and turning it into the occult Luciferian sun. All right? That's what alchemy is, lead to gold. We are the Saturnian time constraint lead, and they want to evolve us to the Luciferian blazing star of the Freemasonic blazing star Sirius, the sun behind the sun, as they would say. And that's what this is all about. I know, it sounds crazy, but take that with a grain of salt. Let's see what happens on Super Bowl Sunday this year, as in every year, and let's see what we find. All right? And I will provide a show for you on Monday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, about the symbolism that we saw when Eminem and Dr. Dre, who's a terrible rapper, great producer, terrible rapper, Kendrick Lamar, who's great, Mary J. Blige. I'm sure the Game will probably show up. It's like a bunch of Los Angeles-based artists, I thought, except for Eminem. I don't know where he got thrown in there, but hey, you know what? Eminem's probably the greatest lyricist of all time. If you were on my Patreon back in 2018, or even today, you can go back on the index. I did a top 50 rapper show, and Eminem was not number one. Top 50 rappers, meaning my favorite top 50 rappers, all right? He's probably the greatest lyricist ever, but I'm about the final product. Who's number one? You're going to have to listen to it to find out. Patreon.com/Illuminati Watcher. I've got an index. And anyway, yeah. Super Bowl Sunday. Let's see what happens. Stay tuned. Stay subscribed to the show. Till next time, stay woke.